This is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm delighted today to be with Chirag Gupta, who's a Dallas native and has a very interesting set of projects here, a very well-known co-working space called Node. So maybe, Chirag, you can just present yourself quickly,
sure.
And then we can get into a little bit of a discussion.
Yeah, delighted to be here. Again, my name is Chirag Gupta. You can find me on Twitter, at Chicago Gupta, and I run The Node, which is a co-working space here in Dallas.
Yeah, and so tell us what happens in this co-working space, because one of the interesting things I discovered about you is that you're also obsessed and passionate about drumming. And it turns out that's a totally relevant skill to creating startup companies. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about Node and what happens there. It's only been going
sure.
15 months or something, I think.
Yeah, we're very new. We launched in Dallas, opened up with a super small space, about 2,000 square feet last year in 2014. Now we've expanded to about 10,000 square feet. And what we offer is an open co-working space. So we literally have a shared desk space. We've got whiteboards on wheels. We have meeting rooms, collaboration rooms. And the entire facility is designed for early stage startup companies, independent freelancers, and really any creative types who want that atmosphere where they can collaborate,
so, et cetera. I think you mentioned that in this 15 months, you've actually been working with something like 20 startup companies.
Yeah.
What kind of companies are those?
So the companies are, wow, there's quite a range. So we've had some companies that are launching brand new mobile apps. So that tends to be the norm is new early stage tech companies that might be, I'll give some examples. So we have Guider right mm-hmm. now, which is a new travel app, which means they're going to be enabling a platform where, you know, any local person like yourself could upload a guide to your own city. And then sell that guide to tourists who discover your guide on the app. So it's kind of a B2C and also sharing economy type mobile app. So it's companies like that. And, you know, Guider came in about 9 months ago and started working at Node. We've kind of helped them make connections with other players in the travel industry and whatever resources they need, right? So the founder came in and you know, she was looking for a developer team. She was looking for designers, marketing people. And now she's got a team of, I think, about 4 or 5 employees, as well as a board of advisors. So it's amazing to see the companies grow in that short time span as well.
So what's interesting is this development of co-working spaces is actually fairly recent in the last 10 years. I think you mentioned that some of the ideas were sort of articulated by someone called Brad Newberg that maybe you can explain a little bit.
Yes.
But basically, if you look at the last 30, 40 years, there's been a succession of waves, of different ways of trying to fluidify the way people have ideas and get them into business development. When I was in university, it was sort of industrial parks and research triangles, and that was in the triple helix of innovation theory, where the only players that mattered were governments, universities, and governments, industry, and universities. Whereas now, of course, we're in a whole networks of entrepreneurship. There was a whole incubator movement for a while, accelerators, and
yep.
now co-working spaces. So what's different about what you know, Brad Newberry articulated and you're actually putting in place?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's really an amazing time to be a part of the co-working movement. That's how I describe it. Brad Newberg is kind of a pioneer in the movement. At the time, in 2005, he was based in San Francisco and is credited with kind of coining and redefining the term co-working into what it is known as today. So back in those days is when you really started to see the Starbucks and the coffee shops fill up with independent consultants, people who were just able to...
Holding meetings.
Yeah, hold meetings, launch websites, launch new companies.
Free internet.
Just, yep, free internet, laptop. Like, what else did they need?
Free electricity.
Free electricity. So that's the movement. It's those people. It's also anyone who wants to create their own lifestyle business and not be necessarily held down into the traditional sort of corporate career path.
So apart from shared facilities and equipment and office space, you organize a number of activities in the co-working space. What kind of activities?
Yes. So for starters, you know, when someone new joins the co-working space, they get introduced to all of the existing members, and I get to facilitate a lot of that. So it's a lot of fun for me to bring a new member into our community, connect them with other startup founders, and also give them a chance to express to the group, what are they working on? What are their goals? What are their needs? And then it kind of goes from there. We have these really fun hackstorming sessions, which I facilitate as kind of a way for groups to get together, brainstorm with each other, and also start creating new things instead of just talking about their ideas. So we do a lot of a lot of meetups, workshops. We'll bring in guest speakers and really just try to keep the space lively and keep the space energized.
I think one of the things I mentioned to you is I was in Paris this summer.
Yes.
And a colleague of mine, Natasha Seignol, who she and a couple of colleagues have a small company called Decalab. And in fact, one of the facilities that she makes use of is a co-working space called Casaco in the Malakoff suburb of Paris, which is actually an old communist neighborhood. And so they have translated the co-working space concept into very much a collaborative, shared, not quite collective ownership, but really that it's not just a bunch of people with their own projects, but they call it the collective tribe.
Sure.
And so that indeed that some of the associations and relationships that get formed in the co-working space will probably last after the companies leave that nest.
Absolutely. I love to hear that. I mean, we love to see that happening at our space, and we look to other spaces around the world for inspiration like that. We've actually started a subgroup at Node of community members that's called the Code Collective.
Uh-huh.
And the Code Collective meets once a month on a Saturday for about 2 or 3 hours, and they actually it's a group of designers and developers offering themselves as a resource for community members who need advice or technical help building new apps and new websites. So it's kind of similar, but
okay. So one of the other things that I wanted to weave into this story is, as you say, you're doing workshops, you're helping teams form and how people learn how to collaborate with each other, which is a trainable skill, obviously. And one of the things you mentioned is that, in fact, one of your deep passions and an activity that takes a lot of your time is drumming.
Yes.
And performing in a variety of different kinds of musical groups. And in fact, you've argued that training has proved to be really, really relevant to your work running a co-working space.
Absolutely. I tell people I bring my drumsticks to work every day, which I do. And we actually have a drum set at the space. We like to have musical instruments and artwork in the space, not just to inspire people, but to actually enable people to go and express themselves. Yeah. I think that's a big part of it. And then for me, I started playing drums when I was around 10 or 11. I went through the percussion program in my middle school and high school. And all the situations I've been in musically, I've felt have really given me lessons that I apply in business. So I could list off some examples, but basically, in a drumline setting, things are very strict. Timing needs to be on point. Everybody needs to be in sync. And there's a certain value to that in business as well, right? Making sure an entire team is on the same page, making sure that everybody's working together at the same time. And, in other contexts, like I've played in musical theater where you've got actors on the stage, you've got singers and dancers, and then you've got a whole band in the background. And in a large production like that, things can go wrong. So learning to adapt and improvise when needed is also another...
One of the things we were talking about is that, as you say, you've had a solo drumming practice, small
yes.
groups, larger groups. And in fact, the dynamics change as you play in these different formats and different sized groups. So, you know, what happens when the group gets above a certain size?
That's a great question. And you're right. I've played played in scenarios where, you know, I've spent hours and hours just practicing on a solo. And then I've also been in scenarios where, you know, in college when I was trying to put a band together, you know, how do we figure out which pieces do we need, which instruments, what kind of musicians do we need in order to create the group that we want? And what is, how does that process even work? So I think that there's a direct parallel there between trying to recruit the right people for a band to function well and trying to recruit the right people for a startup to function well. In both cases, you immediately realize that it's not all about the instrument or the skill the person's bringing to the table, but it's also about the social relationships, the social dynamics that are inherently there with any group of people. So when you ask about what size team is the right size team, or what happens as the number of people in the group grows, it's very interesting. And there's been some research done that we had discussed earlier about the number 12 and sort of 6 to 12 being the magic number for team size. I think for startups, you want to have one, two co-founders, and you want to surround yourself with other experts, consultants, advisors that can fill in the gap areas. So that's kind of my theory on it. But
So has your musical background inspired you in this technique called hackstorming that you've developed?
Yes, absolutely. So
explain what hackstorming is.
So briefly, hackstorming is a method of conducting a meeting where, you know, instead of the traditional way of kind of just setting an agenda, having each person report, and then having a discussion and then closing the meeting, in hackstorming, there's actually a little bit more method there. It's a little bit more facilitated and a step-by-step process where, you know, first you'll start off everybody in the room introducing each other, then the group splits into two pods, has brainstorms on their own, then comes back to the main room, reports individually what they've learned or what their takeaways were, and then there's another period of brainstorming followed by everybody leaving the room altogether and taking 10 minutes
by themselves,
taking a break, and then coming back fresh to then conclude the meeting. And that's definitely inspired by a lot of rehearsals and musical settings I've been in, where we found what we call sectionals in music to be very helpful to the overall ensemble. So in a large marching band, for example, you'll have the group overall rehearse together. Then you'll have sectionals where just the trumpet players are going to go off and rehearse their parts. And just the percussion section is going to go off and rehearse their parts and so on. And then you've also got to leave time in there for the people to breathe and for the meeting to breathe. So that's kind of the short story of where hackstorming comes from.
One of the things that I've read in the literature on this issue of how collaboration techniques change as the group size increases is with small groups, you actually can form a fair amount of social cohesion. But once you get above 6, 12 people, it's not a magic number, that you start developing fault lines in collaborations, and, which may be, you know, the computer scientists versus the graphic designers or the marketing people versus the whatever. It could be age, you know, the 20-year-olds versus the 50-year-olds in the group. And suddenly other kinds of dynamics start coming into play that you then have to design mitigating factors and techniques so that those fault lines don't interfere with the shared goal.
Absolutely. So if you're listening to this and you've got situations where you're running a meeting, I encourage you to try to pay attention next time or be more conscious of these dynamics that Roger's talking about, because that can make it or break it for a company, that can make it or break it for an individual meeting. I think from what I've observed that the key is paying attention to those dynamics. And if you're the leader of the organization or if you're the one facilitating the meeting, you should very proactively and consciously do things to almost choreograph that meeting, as it were, and have the right parties mix.
One of the things I often do in a meeting is I just look at the gender distribution around the table.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing is, you know, when 20 people enter a room and have to sit down, magically, you know, the men are on one side of the table and the women are the other, you know. And so,
yep.
And it's not a conscious, it's not a conscious thing.
Yep.
The other thing that I thought I might inject, so you were born in Texas in Carrollton, I think
yes.
you said. So you're a lot more Texan than I am. But your family is originally of Indian origin.
Yes.
And so what about the ethnic and cultural differences in the co-working space? Does that come into play?
Absolutely. And that's a really great question.
In fact,
I think you
made a stupid comment earlier that you're good at math and science because you're Indian.
Yes, I do stand by that statement. And it is very interesting. We at the co-working space, and many co-working spaces, pride themselves on diversity and inclusivity. And so we do encourage that, which leads to a lot of interesting situations where you have people from all over the world mixing at a co-working space, and there's a lot of, at some times, uncertainty about what is the cultural norm, what's accepted here.
Yeah, or tension about...
there's awkward situations, all sorts of things. And I think that's one of the really cool learning experiences you get from working at a space like this, is that you'll meet people from all over the country, from all over the world, because a lot of times that's where they mix, is at a co-working space. Like right now, for example, we have a member right now who's from visiting from Serbia. He's here for 2 months. We have someone who's from South India, and we have... Yeah, literally people from all over.
Probably the final thought ought to be every culture has its own drumming modes.
Let's
so
get
how
into
do
that.
You how do you get people to play drums that are Indian, African, American, European?
Yeah, and that's the I'm happy to go into that. And I think it's a great way to kind of tie this whole thing in a bow. Music in that way is something that unites people from across cultures. I'm sure every musician listening to this has had that experience at some point where there's kind of an unspoken connection you have, an unspoken bond with another musician. Whether or not you speak the same spoken language, you are always able to connect to each other through your instruments.
But drumming traditions are quite different.
Yeah, drumming traditions are quite different, and I've been in situations where, thankfully, you know, even in high school, we had an Indian drum ensemble from India come and join us and play with our American percussion ensemble, and it just takes a little bit of tweaking, a little bit of adaptation, but I find that in the same way that musicians are able to get over those cultural hurdles and still collaborate with each other. We love seeing that happen in the business world, too.
And you said there's actually a Dallas startup band?
Yes. There.
Have you played in it?
I have. We played at Ignite DFW, and it's a group of Dallas entrepreneurs, Dallas startup founders who are all musical. And I joke that we're going to, you know, next time we go to South by Southwest, we're actually going to perform there, too. So,
get investors that way. Okay, yeah. Chirag, thank you so much for the time in the discussion.
Thank you.
And I look forward to continuing it.
Likewise. Thanks.